content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include couples develop ways to make business and marriage work together, and are you picking the wrong money goals? And we'll begin with couples develop ways to make business and marriage work together. Debbie and Gary Douglas sometimes need to remind each other this is your business partner talking. In business together for 16 years, the Douglases have found that being co-owners of a public relations firm requires them to be more direct with each other than they once were as spouses. Like the time Debbie Douglas was on a ladder in their Newport Beach, California home, and her husband told her to come down because she might break an ankle. I said, "Don't worry about it." He said, "This is your partner speaking. You do have a trade show to go to next week, and you can't do it with a broken ankle," says Debbie Douglas, co-owner of Douglas Strategic Communications. Romantic partners who are also business partners can find that there is a lot of tough talk, listening, learning, and compromising needed as they run a company, a personal relationship, and often a family. Couples may have unique struggles depending on their personalities and the type of business they own. But there are common hot spots, roles and responsibilities that aren't well defined, vastly different styles of communication, or decision making and sometimes a clash of egos. While the Douglases know how to take a hard line with one another, they also know when to budge. You yield to the other person if they are more qualified to make a decision, Gary Douglas said, and you can't have your own way every time, every day. Ben Taylor and his wife Louise learned that lesson the hard way. "At the end of the first work day, my wife burst into tears and said, 'I want to tell my husband how horrible my new boss is.'" Ben Taylor recalls, "The problem was that the husband, who owns a technology consultancy, needed his wife's help but wasn't spelling out her role. Like many entrepreneurs, he also found it hard to relinquish some task. 'I know I'm a bit of a control freak. It just didn't gel. We just got irritated with each other,'" said Ben Taylor, who also owns homeworkingclub.com, an advice website for freelance workers based in Kent, England. The business partnership started in 2006 and failed in just a year. But the couple tried it again in 2013, this time with each of them handling specific responsibilities. She is a writer. He does the consulting and administrative task. "My wife would far rather be free to do work for her clients, essentially working in the business while I'm working on the business," Ben Taylor said. Spouses who co-own companies say friction, while unpleasant in the moment, ultimately helps them strengthen their relationships. "We have learned to get through disagreements the old-fashioned way, through arguing and eventually coming to a compromise that one or both of us are happy with," says Clinton Smith, who owns the retirement planning firm Government and Civil Employee Services, with a husband, Galen Bergerux. The couple founded the business in 2010, 5 years into their relationship. At first, it was rocky. Smith remembers the fights they had over who should be doing what. But the company, based in Indiana, Pennsylvania, thrived, and this was when we knew no matter what, we had to keep working hard, Smith says. They learned how to divide responsibilities according to each partner's strength. Barkstock handles sales, and Smith manages marketing. We have grown both as a business but also as a couple, Smith says. Some couples go for help, not to therapist, but to a business coach. That's how Wendy and Scott Schultz reconcile their differing styles. That, as Wendy Schultz put it, turn decision-making into a battlefield. I would see an opportunity to expand our business in the form of a new investment and would want to act quickly. He would see all of the reasons the investment could go wrong and wanted to take time to assess all the pros and cons, said Wendy Schultz, CEO of the Simple Life Hospitality. The Green Bay, Wisconsin-based company invests in and manages vacation rental properties. There was also tension between the couple over who was in charge. There wasn't a defining moment where we resolved our differences, but over time, we found ways to make our styles complementary for the success of our business, Wendy Schultz says. Through our own trial and error, we developed a happy medium. And next, Liz Weston's column, Are You Picking the Wrong Money Goals? Setting smart, achievable goals is important if you want to take charge of your financial life. But many of us are surprisingly bad at choosing the goals that actually matter most to us. Investment research firm Morningstar had 318 people write down their top three financial priorities, then showed them a master list of goals prepared by the researchers. Three out of four investors changed at least one goal after seeing the master list, and one out of four switched their top priority. We were like, wow, people don't really know what they want, said lead researcher Ray Sin, behavioral scientist at Morningstar. Other behavioral research has shown that even when people think explicitly about what matters to them when making decisions, they overlook many of their most important goals. That interferes with their ability to evaluate their choices and consider alternatives. Among the problems, we're better at thinking short-term than long-term, Sin says. Plus, we may overvalue goals that are currently on our mind. A renter who just attended a housewarming, for example, might say her top priority is saving to buy a home. She may forget that she really wants to be able to quit her job and travel the world for a year. She probably has other goals as well, such as retiring someday and perhaps starting her own business. Of course, all those goals may matter to her, but resources are finite, Sin says. That's why prioritizing is so important. Someone determined to retire early, for instance, may not be able to fully fund a child's college education or leave an inheritance. If you want to check for your own blind spots, quickly write down your three most important financial goals. Then look at Morningstar's master goal list and see if you want to change what you wrote. And here is a list. Be better off than my peers. Pay for personal self-improvement, like go back to school or learn a skill. Experience the excitement of investing. Start a new business. Buy a house. Help pay for my kids' college education. Stop working and do something I love. Go on a dream vacation. Relocate in retirement. Care for my aging parents. Give to charity or other causes I care about. Feel secure about my finances in retirement. Feel secure about my finances now. Leave an inheritance to my loved ones. Retire early. Pay for future medical expenses. Avoid becoming a financial burden to my family as I grow older. manage my debt. Something you may notice about this list, many of the goals involve feelings. Goals that resonate on an emotional level can help people maintain the discipline they need to stick with a financial plan, says Ryan O. Murphy, head of decision science at Morningstar Investment Management. When it starts to become more emotional, it becomes more personal, Murphy says. This abstract thing of saving more money for later may not be a goal that really gets people to move now, today. Even the goals that don't seem emotional, like managing debt, can be transformed into something more powerful if you consider the feelings around them. Paying down debt can make you feel more comfortable and secure and less stressed, for example. Morningstar researcher Samantha Lamas, a recent college graduate who just started paying her student loans, has firsthand experience with goal blind spots. Lamas initially thought paying off her debt was her top priority, but during the study realized that saving for retirement was important as well. Accelerating her student loan payments might have meant missing years of company matches, tax breaks, and tax-deferred compounding that she can get from contributing to her retirement accounts. I no longer think of my financial goals as a zero-sum game where I'm forced to either save for retirement or pay down debt, said Lamas. I can achieve both simultaneously if I'm thoughtful about it. And next, I owe how much? Americans shocked by impact of new tax law. Wait, I owe taxes? The first tax filing season under the new federal tax law is proving to be surprising, confusing, and occasionally frightening for some Americans, especially those accustomed to getting money back from the government. Take Andy Kreff and Amy Elias of Portland, Oregon. The couple had grown comfortable getting a small refund each year, a few hundred dollars or more. Then they found out they owe $10,160 this year. I will never forget the moment. I thought, we look good, and then we added in the next W-2, and my jaw hit the floor, Kraft said. There was no way I wanted to believe what I was looking at was accurate. President Trump promised a reduction in taxes with the new law, and by most measures, the majority of Americans will see some. The nonpartisan Tax Policy Center projected the tax law would reduce individual income taxes by about $1,260 on average, although it benefits higher earners more. Some people already saw the benefit in the form of bigger paychecks. That's because the law forced employers to change what they withheld. But the system is far from perfect, and many workers didn't have enough in taxes set aside. Now the IRS wants that money. In addition, the law also eliminated personal exemptions, increased child credits, limited popular deductions, and generally upended many familiar practices that determine what happens at tax time. That has taxpayers feeling a little unmoored. We were very comfortable with our tax law. It had basically been there since 1986, and suddenly all these things that were very important to people changed. It's all different, said Howard Gleckman, a senior fellow at the Tax Policy Center. Kraft and Elias are able to pay their tax bill, but he's still stunned. He even tried to reverse engineer things to figure out where they went wrong, diving into page after page of IRS rules. He's painstakingly put together all the numbers. The couple ultimately asked a CPA to verify the figures they were seeing on TurboTax. Crushingly, they were correct. The couple's effective tax rate was lower, but they still owe the government. I feel like I have reached a stage of grief of acceptance, he said. In a twisted way, I should have been paying this all year, and now I just have to pay it in one lump sum. A number of experts, such as Gleckman, are urging taxpayers to obsess less about their refund or what they owe when measuring the effect of the new tax law. These are just a sliver of your tax picture. But the truth is, many Americans have come to rely on refunds. About three-quarters of U.S. taxpayers typically get one, and they had averaged around $2,800. For some low-income households, it is the biggest cash infusion of the year. The IRS reported Thursday that the average tax refund as of the second week of filing season was $1,949, down 8.7% from the year earlier. The total number of refunds is down 16%. Experts caution it is too early to draw conclusions about a tax season that ends in April. Plus, the number of returns, 27 million as of February 8th, is down 10% from a year ago, due in part to the partial government shutdown. The picture will become much clearer as more filings are processed, refunds are issued, and the IRS gets back up to full speed. All the same, the initial results have surprised early filers and worried those who haven't yet tackled their taxes. Part of the problem centers around how employees and employers adjusted or didn't adjust withholdings from paychecks to account for the law's changes. The government issued updated withholding guidelines to help employers determine how much to set aside from an employee's paycheck to cover taxes. Withhold too much and you get a refund at tax time, and too little you owe. It is at best an estimate, but it's an estimate that grew drastically more difficult to make under the new law. The Government Accountability Office estimated in a report last summer that about 30 million workers had too little withheld from their paychecks, which made their take-home pay bigger but increased their tax liability. That's about 3 million more workers than normal. Few taxpayers appear to have heeded the IRS's advice to do a paycheck checkup to make sure they had the proper amount withheld. Payroll processor ADP, which is responsible for paying one out of every six Americans, said the vast majority of people in its system didn't update their withholdings last year. Some taxpayers who did make adjustments found they couldn't get it quite right. Kevin McCreener of Milton, Georgia, and his wife normally get a sizable refund each year. It was more than $12,000 last year. While they know waiting for a large refund isn't the best strategy financially, they like a refund and they put anything they get back into their daughter's education. Their income, earned primarily from his wife's job in telecom, can vary greatly, so there was comfort in never facing a big bill. The couple increased her paycheck withholdings to ensure the same, but found they are only getting back $519 this year. Their income and tax rate did increase, and McCreener acknowledges there's probably more he could have done to prepare, but he is very disappointed all the same. Some surprises were welcome, however. Brian Goodall and his wife typically face a tax bill of anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 each year. But this year, the Tigard, Oregon couple is getting a $15,000 refund. They believe they got some benefit from the increased child tax credit. They also made more charitable donations and increased their withholdings. While Goodall isn't entirely sure why it worked out so well, he'll gladly take the refund. Taxpayers can get a better sense of how they fared by looking at their tax liability or effective tax rate. This information is often available on the summary received from an accountant or tax preparation software. They can also look at the total tax on those summaries or the Form 1040. These are not perfect measures either, but provide some perspective. And remember that getting a refund is not necessarily a good thing. Breaking even is really the best outcome from an economic point of view. If you get a refund, that means the government has been holding onto your money when you could have been using it. Additionally, consider that taxes are rarely an equal comparison from year to year, said Eric Bronkant, the head of tax at Betterment and a CPA and certified financial planner. People's lives change in ways that can dramatically influence their taxes, such as marriages, divorces, kids, moving, or job changes. The average taxpayer may not realize the full impact of some of these changes and what they may have. I am not surprised by the reaction people are having, Bronkant said, but I think for some people the reaction is more justified than others. Next, Payless Shoes to close all its U.S. stores. Payless Shoe Source is shuttering all of its 2,100 remaining stores in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, joining a list of iconic names like Toys R Us and Bon Ton that have closed down in the last year. The Topeka, Kansas-based chain said Friday it will hold liquidation sales starting Sunday and wind down its e-commerce operations. All of the stores will remain open until at least the end of March, and the majority will remain open until May. The debt-burdened chain filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in April 2017, closing hundreds of stores as part of its reorganization. At the time, it had more than 4,400 stores in more than 30 countries. It emerged from restructuring 4 months later with about 3,500 stores and eliminated more than $435 million in debt. The company said in an email that the liquidation doesn't affect its franchise operations or its Latin American stores, which remain open for business as usual. It lists 18,000 employees worldwide. Shoppers are increasingly shifting their buying online or heading to discount stores like TJ Maxx to grab deals on name brand shoes. That shift has hurt traditional retailers, even low-price outlets like Payless. Heavy debt loads have also handcuffed retailers, leaving them less flexible to invest in their businesses. But bankruptcies and store closures will continue through 2019, so there's no light at the end of the tunnel, according to a report by CoreSight Research. Before this announcement, there have been 2,187 U.S. store closing announcements this year, with Gymboree and Ascena Retail, the parent of Lane Bryant and other brands, accounting for more than half the total, according to the research firm. This year's total is up 23% from the 1,776 announcements a year ago. Year-to-date, retailers have announced 1,411 store openings, offsetting 65% of store closures, it said. Payless was founded in 1956. Next, Walmart flexes in the fourth quarter, beats all expectations. Walmart beat expectations on quarterly profit and revenue, and e-commerce sales surged during the critical holiday period. Shares moved sharply higher before the opening bell Tuesday. Walmart is the first major retailer to deliver fourth quarter results, and its performance provides more evidence that efforts to expand services online as well as in the stores are widening the gap between itself and traditional rivals, while at the same time is holding its own against Amazon. The huge numbers from the world's largest retailer are especially encouraging after a very weak December retail sales report last week from the U.S. Commerce Department led many to fear that consumers had gone into hiding. The government data, delayed by a government shutdown, hinted that a volatile stock market, a government impasse, and a trade war with China had taken their toll on the American psyche. That, at least in Walmart's case, appears to be untrue. Walmart and other retailers are also benefiting from the woes of others. Toys R Us and Bon-Ton stores have gone out of business, and the list of casualties keeps getting longer. This week, Payless Shoe Source began liquidation sales at more than 2,100 stores in the U.S. and Puerto Rico. Sears is shrinking and JCPenney is floundering. Walmart posted strong sales across a wide range of products, from toys to groceries and electronics. That helped sales at stores open at least a year rise 4.2% at its U.S. namesake stores, following a 3.4% pace in the fiscal third quarter. Since buying Jet.com more than 2 years ago, Walmart has been expanding online by acquiring brands and adding thousands of items. It's also been ramping up grocery delivery and pickup options. Walmart now offers grocery delivery service at 800 stores and grocery pickup at 2,100 stores. Walmart has revamped its website with a focus on fashion and home furnishings. That all helped to drive a 43% increase in e-commerce sales in the quarter, matching the pace from the previous period. Walmart has become a gravitational force online surprisingly fast. Pleasingly, Walmart is successfully broadening its online base of customers and is now attracting both younger and more affluent demographics, wrote Neil Saunders, Managing Director of Global Data Retail, a retail research firm. These are early days, but Walmart is now a serious contender in the online space and presents a much more serious threat to Amazon than it did 18 months ago. The company had a fourth quarter profit of $3.69 billion, or $1.27 per share. Earnings removing one-time items were $1.41 per share, which is 8 cents better than analysts had expected, according to a survey by Zacks Investment Research. The Bentonville, Arkansas company had revenue of $138.79 billion, also better than expected. We've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.